honor the time that a woman took off to raise her kids, because that resume gap seems like a gap, but she worked harder than ever.
Welcome to another episode of Higher Learning. I am your host, Oz Rashid, and today I'm very excited to bring Jess Ekstrom. Jess is the founder of Mic Drop Workshop and a renowned speaker. I'm so excited, Jess, to have a conversation. I don't want to hype it up too much, but I think this is going to be a great discussion. How are you doing today?
I think so too. I can already feel like this is the beginning of a long friendship, but I'm doing good. Wow. Thanks for having me.
That, and I've had, I think this is the third or fourth cup of coffee. So
wait, what time is it? What time is it where you are?
It's like 5 o'clock. So
you can do that and sleep.
Yeah, I actually feel like my body has become impervious to caffeine. In fact, I can't really feel it unless I mainline it into my system right away. So yeah, I kind of got a problem. I probably shouldn't be drinking Red Bull right before bed, but it seems to work out.
Hey, if it works, it works. You do you.
I love it. Yeah. So let's start here. Okay. I want to talk because I did some research on Mic Drop Workshop, and I think it's a really, really fascinating thing to be helping people with and doing with people. Tell us about the company.
Yeah.
And I want to know who your target customers are. Who are the people you're focusing on helping the most?
So Mic Drop Workshop helps women become professional keynote speakers. And this began, as most companies do, with a problem. I was doing a lot of speaking. I started my first company, Headbands of Hope, when I was in college. And the way I was able to spread the word as a broke college student with no marketing budget and really no idea what marketing was speaking. And I was really starting to speak a lot and realized, hey, I'm usually one of the few women on these stages. And one event, I remember I always would have a call before the event, just like you do, you know, with this podcast, and I always ask, okay, what was it about me? Why did you book me to speak? And this particular event said, I'm just going to be honest with you. I know nothing about you, but we needed a woman. Whoa. And I was like, okay, have I just been transported to the 1950s? Like, what is going on here? Right.
Him.
Yeah. I appreciated, you know, being direct. He goes, we got really bad audience feedback last year that we had an all male lineup. So we were just looking for a woman to fill the spot. And so I started doing more research and realized that less than 30% of paid public speakers are women. And then just continuing to be observant of my own experiences, I was speaking at another event and got home. The event planner called me 2 weeks later and was like, look, off the record, I just want to let you know that you ranked highest on our audience feedback form of the weekend of all our keynotes. Like, great. What's the problem? She said, we paid you $8,500 to come speak, and we paid our morning mail keynote $50,000 to come speak. She was like, I just,
again, being very candid with you, you just must be like, people just must see your face and want to be honest. That's amazing.
I'm like, but I appreciate it because, and you know, a lot of times we don't, and in the spirit of hiring people, it's like, you don't talk about what do you make? What do you pay? Like, money has been so taboo and we can't help each other if no one's being honest. And so even those were wake up calls, I really appreciated them. So I started Mic Drop Workshop in 2018 and we have courses, community programs and training to help women speak professionally if they want to make it their career. And we also have trainings within companies to help women speak confidently at work, delivering presentations, giving meetings, answering Q&As without getting flustered, really anything that can help women speak confidently wherever they are.
Okay. And we're going to come back to those tips, but now I'm like fascinated and I've got a bunch of like curiosities that are going through my head. So first thing is, was this like 7-8-year-old Jess was like the first one up at the talent show or show and tell? Like, were you always somebody that was just predispositioned to get out in front of people and orate and talk and storytell?
You know, that's a great question. And the answer is no. I'm actually pretty introverted. I wasn't always dispositioned to be like the life of the party or the center of attention. But for whatever reason, I always felt like when I was up in front of people sharing something that I thought was helpful, I got such a rush from it. I gave tours at my college. I taught group fitness classes, you know, just even though that wasn't something that I considered myself being extroverted, anytime I was in a position where I could like speak and I felt like it was making people better, I just knew that I really liked that feeling.
Oh, I really love that. What about, okay, so like, let's say that you've done a speech, you've done a presentation, you've done a talk, and it's immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. How do you know, or how do you validate how well you did? Or like, you know, like, mm-hmm, I crushed that. Like, what are the things you're looking at? What's going through your head? Because you had to wait for the survey to get that feedback, but I'm sure right. You knew that you crushed that. So what are you looking for? What are you looking for during the actual presentation to know you're doing what you need?
I think in the beginning of my career, it was like, just like anyone, you're almost afraid of feedback, even that's when you need it the most, because you're like, if someone said, you know, if 99 people thought you were amazing and one person was like, she was terrible, you're just going to be thinking about that one person. But sure. One thing I've actually started using is a service called Talkadot, and I put it in my presentation and it asks everyone what they thought. And a lot of people ask for my slide deck at the end of it because they want to remember the slides. And so I said, scan this QR code, fill out the survey, you'll get the slide deck. And that's been a great way for me to be able to quantify, like, 95% of the audience found this helpful instead of just banking on a feeling. The other part of speaking is, you know, the confidence to quote a rate without a lot to back it up, I think, is a problem in the industry. Like, someone can just float out 50K, 30K, 20K, and say that they have spoken at XYZ places. But to be able to add some data behind it of like, I spoke at your industry and this was the feedback, I think will help bring some honesty into the industry.
That's incredible. Here's what I've got to ask you. One of the things that you do is you help women in particular, obviously, monetize this, right? And like, not just not to be confident in speaking, but actually take it and get monetary value out of it. Now, listen, I know I'm not your target audience. I've been asked to speak at a lot of engagements. You know, I've never once been offered to be paid. So am I just like really? Not asking, or am I doing the wrong thing, or what am I doing wrong?
I was about to ask, have you asked?
No, I haven't.
So I'm like, yeah.
They ask me and I'm like, this is great for the brand and I'm in, and what do you need? And then I'm like flying on my own dime and like doing things. And no, I haven't asked. Is that the problem?
That's probably, I would say, step one. And a way that I like to position that question is, instead of saying, do you have a speaker budget? Ask, what is your speaker budget? I would love to make this work. What's your speaker budget? And because when you say like, do you have it? It can kind of infer, well, maybe you do, maybe you don't, but yeah, what's your speaker budget for this? But I also, there are ways, like you said, to be great exposure for the brand. That kind of stuff can work, but I still like to officialize it in some ways. So some ways that you can bring non-monetary value from a speaking engagement. Asking for the rights to the footage and photos, because that's great to use for marketing. Footage and like videos, photos, anything that they take, great to use for marketing. If they're pleased with it, request a testimonial in advance. And then what a lot of people don't do that I think is a really key thing is ask for like 5 referrals to other events within 2 weeks after the program. Like, if you're pleased with it, would also love for you to introduce me to 5 other events. And then put it in the contract. Even if it's a free event, like, officialize it in some way. And those are really great ways, even if you're speaking for free, to get value out of it that can help bring other stage opportunities.
That is great advice. No wonder you started your own company. This is great advice. Now when I make my first speaking check, I'm going to have to send you a cut.
I was going to say, I'll take 10%. No, I'm just joking.
Off the VIG, all right? It'll probably be for 80 bucks. So you might get $8 out of that one. All right, that's great advice. Now I want more advice, but I want it for more of our women, our female listeners.
Yeah.
Maybe they're getting up to get a presentation at work. Maybe they're doing a Q&A. Maybe they were asked to speak at their first event.
Yeah.
Just tips, like dealing with the nerves. How do you prepare? How do you kind of advise people in terms of like making sure that they go out there and they do their best work?
The biggest piece of advice that I can give to someone who's about to talk, whether it's like at their place of work, or whether you're, you know, giving a speech at your friend's wedding, or whether you're about to give something as big as a TED talk, is this mindset shift that helped me a ton. Usually a lot of times when we get nervous to speak, we think it's because we're not prepared, but usually it's because of our intentionality behind the talk. So I like to classify it as two different types of speaking. You have being a spotlight speaker, which means you're going up on stage, the light is shining on you. You're asking yourself things like, will they like me? I want to be perfect. How will I be seen? How will I be perceived? I don't want to embarrass myself. What will everyone think of me after this? That's a spotlight speaker. But I suggest switching that mindset to what I call a lighthouse speaker. So light's not on you. You're shining it out on the audience and saying, how can I best use my time to serve them? How can I bring them like one, you know, step closer to where they want to go? Maybe, you know, if you're talking at someone's wedding, instead of how will I come across, being saying to yourself, I want to make sure XYZ bride or groom really gets honored in this moment and coming up with that mindset. And so the spotlight speaker, all eyes on me. I want to be perceived as good, which is a totally uncontrollable experience. You're not going to get 100% approval rating anywhere. But a lighthouse speaker, totally within your control to say, I'm here to help the people who are listening get 1% better than they were before. So once you shift from a spotlight to a lighthouse, it's not about perfection. It's not about like, is this the right outfit? Am I, you know, will people like me after? Will they come buy me my book? It's, did I do my job and make them better than before?
That's really great advice. I want to ask you, I love that lighthouse. I'm going to use that for sure. And again, you probably give a better presentation and talk because you're making it about, every time you make it about everybody else and you don't make it about yourself,
totally,
in pretty much any instance on anything, that's usually a winning formula. So I think that is fantastic advice. One of the things that I had to learn for myself was, you know, I used to think, and maybe this is still the case, I used to think I was a better writer than I was speaker, mm-hmm. right? I felt really good about my emails and my writing ability. And so I would overly write everything I wanted to say, and I would write my jokes and everything. Oh, this one's going to crush. And then I would memorize it like I'm George Clooney out here in a movie.
You're like, line?
And then invariably, I would either miss my cue or be like, oh, damn, I didn't go back to that joke. And it would throw me off. And what I learned to do was now start to build my presentation in bullet points.
Yes.
And now talk the concepts and don't overly script it. And I started doing way better after
so
I did that.
So much better. I mean.
Is that good advice? Is that usually work for most people that way?
Fantastic advice. I would say like never write your talk with a pen. Write with a Sharpie or a big fat marker because you just want the big ideas. One of the tips that I like to give in Mic Drop Workshop that could help with this as well is, you know, break, let's say you have to speak for an hour or 30 minutes or something that seems really daunting. Can you break that up into like 5-10 minute smaller talks that fit that time frame? And with each of those smaller talks, we use a formula called bump, set, spike. And the bump is telling people why they should listen. Why is this relevant to them? What are they about to learn? The set is setting the scene. It's the story that you personally learned it from, or maybe an anecdote from a client or someone else, or even a case study. But like, how does this actually happen in practical life? And then the spike is the headline. What's the one piece of information that you want them to walk away with that they can put it in their pocket? They could put it on a bumper sticker. They could make it the background on their phone. Like, what's the gift that you are leaving them with of the summary? And so you create 5 bump set spikes, and that's a 1-hour talk for you.
More great advice. This is so practical. It's so tactical. You can take it away. We have people writing this down. You are a mother of 2 under 2. Mm-hmm. God bless you. I got 4 kids, but they are not under, you know, they're under the age of 13. So there's a little more space there. That's not an easy undertaking. And I'm always amazed at mothers and fathers, right, who balance both of these priorities. You know, do you think we as a professional society, have we done enough to have empathy or give flexibility and especially show mothers the ability that you can both manage and grow your career and take care of, you know, these 2 life forces at home and give your best to both of those worlds? Do you think that we do that well as a professional society? And then What advice, you've been given so much great advice. What advice do you have to anybody who's going through that right now and balancing maybe two young kids and trying to manage their career? Because a lot of founders listen to this podcast. So like, what are the things that they can maybe implement in their companies to show more empathy, to show more flexibility around this particular?
Okay, to answer your first question of like, are we doing enough? My answer would be not even close. Not even close.
We have pretty progressive maternity and paternity leave here at our company. We try to do a lot. We try to have, we have a lot of people. What's kind of cool about my company is that a lot of times the people that we hire are very early in their career. And so many times they're going through it for the first time with us. And it's an amazing thing that we want to share. In fact, my number one employee who I hired back in 2011 just had his first baby yesterday. Aww. Right. And so he's off right now, but I'm with you on that because I do think that it's unfair that the woman a lot of times is the one that it's just expected has to take, well, you know, maybe you can't do everything that you want to do in your career now because, you know, you got the kids and you got these different things. And what can we do? Is there something we should be doing better about that? What can a company do to implement a policy that maybe fights against that?
A lot of times people at work think that they're helping women by not offering up opportunity because they're pregnant or because they're about to have a baby or whatever it might be. But don't make that choice, you know, for someone. I've had, you know, events that have said, oh, we wanted to bring you to speak, but we found out you were pregnant and figured that you probably didn't want to. But then it just goes back to, okay, well, then now I'm not getting the opportunity or she's not getting the opportunity to get in on this project. And so what seems like good intentions is actually just steps back.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So like give them that chance and let her decide for herself. But it really also just goes back at a much bigger level of affordable childcare, affordable diapers, just like even, you know, the amount of pressure on women to breastfeed, which can be really hard to go back to work and do that at the same time. There's just a lot of help that's needed. I mean, the like U.S. General Surgeon just declared, I think it was like, I don't know if he called it a state of emergency, but that parenting, the stress of parenting is like the worst it's ever been. There's no childcare with inflation. Childcare is too expensive. There's no village anymore. Like we used to live with families or be able to do that. And so I just have a new empathy, not just for moms, but for dads, you know, just having to make that choice every day. One more thing I will say too, when it comes to what we can do as hiring in companies, is honor the time that a woman took off to raise her kids, because that resume gap seems like a gap, but she worked harder than ever. And some of my best hires have been moms coming back from back into the game. They can manage just about any problem or hiccup and do it in a quarter of the time. Like, and so I think even LinkedIn now is offering like for you to put on your resume gap that you were raising kids, because that should be treated, shouldn't be treated as taking time off, but just a season of some of the most hard working time in your life. And so be open to hiring those women that are looking back to get in the workforce after that.
All right, we got to get to hiring because that's what this podcast is about. Now, you've been involved in hiring for your own company and hiring in other organizations, and you've obviously got a great point of view on a lot of different things. So I want to learn a little bit about how you've identified talent to come be part of a team with you or to work with you. Let's start here. What's a core hiring philosophy of yours in terms of type of people or the type of approach you want to take to bringing people into your organization?
I think as an entrepreneur, I love to hire people that have a self-starter mindset and who most of the things that we do, I mean, Mic Drop Workshop is like 6 years old now. I mean, so we're not like a new company, but I still feel like it's new. It's like, either you're figuring it out or I'm figuring it out. And I would love for you to be the one to figure it out.
Yeah, I can't afford to hire a bunch of people that are relying on me to figure everything out. That's not the point of hiring people, right?
100%. So people who are, here's the goal. What do you think and how we get there? And not just looking like, okay, I'm on my Monday task board. Let me cross off the things that I need to do. So looking for that entrepreneurial spirit, which can be hard. But once you have it, really making them feel like they're as much of a founder, you know, as you are is important.
That's a really smart thing. Is there any way, like an interview is such a short amount of time to try to identify these key traits. Is there a favorite question that you like to ask or anything that you find to be particularly insightful when you ask this question, you get good responses?
You know, one of the things that I like to do is present real problems that we've had. And what do you think? What would you do? And just like to see, even if they don't come up with something that is usable or right, just like, what was your thought process behind that? How did you get here from this issue? What questions did you ask me from presenting like this idea? So I would say that some of those real life scenarios that we've encountered or sharing, you know, these are issues that we're having in the company. These are my fears. Like, what do you think about it? Has been really great to just see how people think on their feet.
Yeah, those situational questions you're always going to get. Like you said, it's really about, you know, not the answer you give, but how did you get to the answer? Show how you're thinking, show how you approach things. I think that gives you a great sense of what you can expect when they handle similar type situations at your company. So I think that's good.
And I think I also, one of the things that I started asking, because I realized I was doing this wrong, was where do you want to go? And to be honest, is this a launching pad for you to start? Do you want to start your own thing one day? Is this, I think, you know, the idea that someone has to be with you forever is pretty dated now. Like, it's great when that happens, but I'm also not expecting everyone to just ride this ship till the end. If something else comes along and they want to start their own thing, amazing. So what do you want from that? Because what I was doing was I was inserting what I thought that they wanted and instead of asking them. And I was wrong in a couple of those and found that it was much better to just be like, where do you want to go from here? And what do you want to be doing? And also having those check-ins with them after they're hired, whether that's quarterly or annually, like what are the things that just you absolutely dread about this job? What do you want to be doing more of? And making sure that at least 75% of their job they love. I don't need them to love every single part of it, but at least 75%.
Those are good. Those are really good. Yeah. What about a memorable interview experience? If I ask you, is the good, bad, doesn't matter, but does any come to mind when I ask you about whether you're interviewing or you're interviewing somebody else?
Yes. The first person I ever hired was my college roommate for my first company. And we were both 18 years old. And we always laugh about this to this day because now she's the president of the company. It's been acquired. She's now with the acquiring company. I mean, she was on this ride from day one. But when we were 17, 18 years old, I knew that I wanted to hire her out of college because she had been helping me a lot. I didn't know what that looked like. So we joke because we had an interview with me and my dad and her dad.
Oh, this is amazing.
Sitting at a table.
Whose idea was that? Was that your idea? Like, her
I
idea?
I don't even remember. Dad's idea? But we brought our dads to this interview and, you know, talked about numbers and commission. And like, so we laugh to this day because now we've traveled all over the country. We've had done deals with like the NBA and all these crazy things that we've been able to now do on our own. But in the beginning, we had our dads at the table.
That's amazing. I love that. Dads in the interview. Yeah. That's innovation right there. I know. That's amazing. Did they ask any questions or did they do anything?
Yeah,
or
are
they
just kind of sitting? I think it was mostly, you know, translating what, I mean, I didn't even know what a W-2, you know, just all these things that are just more of the legalities of it. I just knew that I wanted her help because, and it goes back to saying, you know, what things stand out. She was my first hire and my first company, Headbands of Hope. We give headbands to kids with cancer. We had a hospital donation lined up. and she was going to volunteer and help me bring headbands to this hospital. I woke up that morning sick, and we could have easily just canceled the donation and rescheduled it. But she's like, I got it, and went and delivered the headbands and got some amazing, you know, stories and stuff that we could use and contacts. And it was that moment where I was like, oh, I didn't even need to hand you a guideline. You just did it. And so just knowing that I wanted her and I saw that and what she was studying like something physical therapy, and it had nothing to do with now running a company. And so I think that's another thing of being able to see people beyond what they present themselves as is a trait that I've tried to have. Is like, I know you've studied this, I know you've done this, but what else can you do based on your character and your values and what you love, you know?
Well, that's what the great leaders do, is they see things in people that others don't, right? Yeah. It's easy to draft LeBron James number one, but right. You know, can you find like the players that are the diamond in the rough, or that you have to take them into the right environment and shape them, Whether it be an athlete, whether it be a professional? That's a really great skill. And you said you love self-starters. So her going there and handling it on her own was just another indication of somebody that was ready for that. I think that's excellent. Was that the best hire you ever made?
I think so. I would, and my husband will be mad because I've also hired my husband, but but
he's number two.
Yeah, he's number two. But Lauren, I mean, she's my longest person I've ever had, and someone who, again, just treated that company as if it was her own. And it's really rare to find that. But I think I'd be remiss if I didn't also, I think sometimes where things can get messy is when you want to hire people, or when people want to work for you because they have the heart for it, but not the head. And it has to be a combination of both. You know, I used to have a lot of attention to people who were just very passionate about what I was doing. But at the end of the day, all of this is still a business. And I think me 10 years ago would be like, that's so, you know, ruthless or heartless. And I'm like, no, at the end of the day, this just has to make sense for people.
I really love that analogy, because I think early on in my career, especially as I had my own company and it was a startup, and somebody was like, I'll run through a wall, I'll do whatever it takes. Right. I want to be here so much. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Some of the worst hires I've ever
exactly.
made.
Exactly. Like, same thing.
Wanting to be here is not enough of a quality mm-hmm. to be amazing and exceptionalness. And so to your point, the heart and the head, you find the combination there, then you're going to be in a really good spot. Yeah, it takes a little bit of time, because I look at myself as somebody that has a deep amount of empathy and mm-hmm. wants the best for people. And quite frankly, if they want to work here and they want to invest their time in me and this company, that means a lot to me. But sometimes you have to, you know, be a little bit more calculated about it and really evaluate the criteria that's important for the success and the role in the company, more so than just wanting it, because that's not enough, unfortunately.
When do you, when is it for you like a chance to give feedback versus when you know it's not a good fit?
So one of the things I famously say to my managers is, I never want to be a company that hires to fire. And in particular in my industry, you'll find that they'll hire four salespeople and fire two. It's just like a churn and burn machine. It's the same way that they call, make 100 calls. And
there's
just, it's a transaction. It's commoditized. It's throwing stuff up on the wall. You hit enough numbers, you make enough money. Never will be me. Mm-hmm. For me, I tell my managers all the time, when you hire somebody and you vouch for them, and we go through a pretty diligent process, because you got to believe that we're going to advise people on how to hire, we better be damn good at doing it ourselves. So we take it very, very seriously. And so I always say, in the first 6 months, if you're ready to let somebody go, you either messed up in hiring them or messed up in managing them. You tell me mm-hmm. which one, so I can understand and we can work on getting you the development you need in the area. However, even sometimes when you put as much work as you can, you miss. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to get to a point where you've clearly outlined what's missing, given that feedback, and then give a certain amount of time to see changes, see the returns on that. And then I think you have to be adamant about, at that timeline, doing the right thing. It's really interesting, because this came up pretty recently. My CRO, we were talking about how, you know, somebody is like not performing the way they need to, right? But invariably, like, they've got a couple things going on that if just it hits and this happens. And he goes, you know what, Oz? He goes, in my last company, I had this same conversation with the founder there, and I was actually in the same camp that you were in terms of, oh, you know, they've got these things going on and should we see it through? And you know what? My founder was real ruthless, actually. He said, nope, we've got to let these people go. And we did. And there was 8 different situations. And I went back and mapped out all of those opportunities after the fact. We handed them off to our best people that we kept, and none of them came through. So what ends up happening is that you end up rationalizing a lot of times, oh, it's going to work out, or it's going to happen. And at the end of the day, this is business. There has to be results. And so we're going through a little bit of an ebb and flow over the last couple of years where we've always been a great culture. This is a place that people love to work. They love the people they work with. And performance has always been important. But we're raising the bar on that a little bit too, because we want to make sure that we drive the impact that we want to have as a company. And to do that, we have to all be pulling in the same direction. We all have to be pulling our weight. We have to have people that are in the right spots, the right people in the right seats on the bus, right? Mm-hmm. As famously is said. And so for me, it's a little bit nuanced. There's no silver bullet like we talked about earlier. But I think the right thing is, once you start to identify these issues, you've got to lean in and coach hard and feedback and be direct, but also fair, right? In what you see, right? And then you've got to give time to see if it improves when you've given them the feedback, because many times people don't realize. And then from there, you have to make decisions, right? And you have to be standard about that, because if you don't, then you're going to set a precedent of, you know, you talk a bunch, but you don't actually do it. Your actions don't back it up. Or, yeah, you tell me that I need to get it going, but really there's no accountability to it. And so it's this blend and this ebb and flow that you fight through and you learn. And you know what? You hire great managers who know how to do it and do it well, that care deeply, but also care deeply enough about the organization to make the right decisions for the greater populace overall of the company. Right. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, no, that's helpful, because, you know, I find myself, there's been a few scenarios where, you know, I've had a hunch maybe around like year one or two, and I'm like, something, you know, just doesn't feel right. And I throw everything at it. I'm like, help, let me help, coaching, this, that, accountability. And then it ended up, you know, not being a fit. And I think about like, man, if I had listened to that instinct at the beginning, would I have saved a lot of time and money into trying to salvage this this person or this agreement? But then at the same time, I'm like, well, I had to see it through, or else I felt like I was giving up too quickly. So just finding that balance between training and feedback versus knowing when it's not right is a tough dance for me.
One other thing I'd say real quickly to that is, I have had success with some people that you gave them the benefit of the doubt and they turned it around. Mm-hmm. And typically what has happened in those situations are, it's the right person, wrong role, right? Mm. And sometimes it's because they've been promoted into the wrong role, or maybe it's because the role has evolved as your company has scaled and now the needs of it have changed.
Yeah.
And so that point becomes a determination of, do we have something that does make sense for what this person's great at, right? Or has the company just grown to a different place and gone to a different place, and we're actually doing them a disservice by keeping them. And that's another evaluation point. I have seen great success.
Do you need any service?
Sorry, what?
Do you need any service?
No, I'm good.
Chocolate?
I'm good. Thank you, though. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's amazing. We're keeping that in. That's incredible. I'm definitely keeping that in. That's on the Higher Learning Podcast bloopers reel that's coming up.
Someone came in and offered me chocolate. I'm like, that's never happened to me in a hotel before.
That's amazing. All right, Jess, a couple things, and then we'll get to the lightning round, all right? You got any good books or good content you'd recommend for our listeners?
Ooh, there's a lot. Let's see, a book that I really love right now. So one of them that I really like, my friend Dr. Lauren Cook, especially as it comes to like raising kids, is called Generation Anxiety. And she's just talking about kind of just the anxious generation that we're in. And that's just helped me have a lot more empathy for myself and people around me. And then my friend Hannah Brencher just published a book called Unplugged, and it is all about how to get more unplugged hours in your life, which is something that I struggle with, being so addicted to my phone. So Generation Anxiety and Unplugged are two books that I would highly recommend.
Great recommendations. Mm-hmm. You're so connected. Like, I wish I was like my good friend Simon Sinek wrote this book. Power of Why, and then Ray Dalio, another close friend of mine.
We got to get them all on the podcast. I'll send you some names.
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on it. Yeah. I'm working on it. Maybe I should have come to you. I could feel good about it. You can give me some prep and confidence when I'm talking to them to invite them onto the show.
I got you.
All right, here we go. Before the lightning round, last question.
Okay.
If you had some advice to give your 20-year-old self that you didn't know then, but that you know now, what would it be?
People are not thinking about me as much as I think they are. You feel like you're living in a fishbowl, but everyone's in their own fishbowl. Like, the fish aren't looking at the other fish. They're just worried about their own fishbowl. And so I feel like that would release a lot of just that spotlight mindset that we talked about earlier on, and allow me to just relax more and take more risks. And even though I did end up doing that, I feel like I would have had more fun if I realized, what if this was all just an experiment and no one's really watching? That's what I would tell myself.
My 13-year-old daughter calls it main character energy.
Yes.
We all think that things are so much more acute and we see them more, but reality is everybody else is really just living their
life.
Yeah,
it's such a wonderful discovery.
They're an extra in your movies, really, when it comes down.
It's so true. Your daughter needs to write a book on that. Yeah. Or if she wants to be a speaker, let me know. Yeah.
I know. She's. I want to make sure she monetizes.
Yeah,
right?
Dad's really
caring about that now. So I'll have to agree. All right, we're going to go lightning round.
Let's
and we're going to talk about past speeches or presentations or conferences you spoke at.
Okay.
What's the longest one you've ever given?
90 minutes as far as like a keynote, and never again. I'm like, no one, even if you're really good, no one wants to hear something for more than an hour. So hour is my cap.
Largest crowd.
Ooh, 20,000 live streamed to 100,000 virtual.
Yeah. Which one was that?
LeaderCast Live. In Atlanta. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
What's the one that you got the best opportunity because of?
Ooh. Honestly, it was this small college in Michigan. And one of the other speakers was Mark Randolph, because he's a co-founder of Netflix and first CEO. And he just was there out of the goodness of his own heart. And that was 10 years ago, and he's been a friend and mentor of mine, and has endorsed my book, has referred me to opportunities, and he's just the kind of like leader that I want to be. He's someone I look up to a lot, and I met him at that event.
It's funny because I don't know if you've read No Rules Rules, right? It talks about the Netflix culture.
Oh, yeah.
That's not
I haven't read
book,
it,
Mark.
But yeah, yeah.
It's really good. Reed Hastings, I think, is his co-founder.
Yeah.
I love listening to Mark. I've heard him on different podcasts and things like that. And he talks a lot about the story of, you know, how they were the DVD company, right? And they were shipping out in the mail, and how they eventually changed into Netflix. So that's awesome.
If you haven't read his book, That Will Never Work, put it on your list. It's really good.
I think I have.
Yeah.
I think I have, but I will go look and make sure. Yeah. I have to check out my library at home. Okay. We lost our train. That was lightning round. What am I doing here?
Right.
What's your favorite outfit to wear for a big presentation speech? And I'm going to tell you what, that's not a misogynistic question. I would absolutely ask.
No, I believe it. I would say I've been really into pantsuits lately. Very powerful.
Okay. What color? Are we going with Pantone? What are we going with?
Pantone color? Yeah, I know. We were just talking about this. I am like into jewel tones, blues, greens, emeralds, something like that. Yeah.
Popping on stage. Yeah. All right. Last question. What is the best thing a host can do for you to ensure that you have a great presentation at their conference or whatever it is?
Oh, great question. Honestly, a confidence monitor is so helpful as a speaker. And that's when there's a screen at the bottom of the stage that only the speaker can see. And it's timing that you have, what slide is currently behind you, what slide is next. And it just is a good... It's a thing that gives you like the moment you have to worry about tech and AV, you'll lose your train of thought. So having a confidence monitor is so helpful at events.
Well, Jess, I really hyped up the pod at the beginning, but I'm going to tell you what, I think we exceeded.
Did we live up to it? I hope so.
Well, we'll have to ask the listeners, but I'm feeling pretty good about it.
I'm feeling good too. Would love to hear what anyone thinks.
Yeah, we are going to get some great feedback for this. I'm so excited for everybody to get to listen to it. Please do me a favor. If you like the episode, subscribe. Give us 5 stars. How many stars did they get? 5? I don't know. 5 stars, whatever it is. Give us the highest amount of stars possible. Give us feedback. And Jess, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so appreciative. Namaste.
Thanks for having me. Have a great rest of
your day. Good luck at your talk tomorrow.
Thank you, Oz. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you later.